Welcome to another pandemic-proof installment of Unmuted. I'm Jay Mariotti. They say audio reading is the new book publishing, so here's my latest column, and a provocative one at that, titled, When People Aren't Safe, How in the Living Hell Can You Resume Sports? Do we need sledgehammers to blast away the ignorance? Blow torches to thaw the collective brain freeze? Simple medical logic cannot be repeated enough. It's unconscionable, if not criminal, to resume contact or close-quarter sports amid a pandemic until the athletes know that they are safe beyond doubt. And with testing capacity still woefully inadequate and no vaccine or cure in sight, they will not be safe. Does everybody grasp this? Regardless of flim-flam assurances from sports leaders who've suddenly become infectious disease experts, armed with degrees from the University of Phoenix. For every realistic soul, such as NBA Commissioner Adam Silver, who told players that resuming the season is increasingly unlikely amid perhaps, quote, the single greatest challenge of our lives, end quote, America remains vexed by an obnoxious wave of empathy-challenged clowns such as Dana White, who said not long ago, and I'm quoting White, I don't give a shit about the coronavirus, end quote, he said it. The mixed martial arts maniac thinks he's a conquering hero now after staging UFC 249 in Jacksonville, Florida, the first live U.S. sports event of magnitude since the outbreak. I would call White a snake who is so obsessed with making money, turning itchy gamblers loose, and promoting his violent sport at $65 a pop for a fight card without spectators in a nation where nearly half the adult population is jobless, that he abandoned all cogent concern for human life in what only can be called a debacle. In a sane world, White would be apprehended for putting lives at risk, proceeding with the event after a fighter, Ronaldo Jacare Souza, and two of his corner men tested positive for the virus. This after White and UFC owner Endeavor, a Hollywood agency rocked by the crisis, angered the health community by using 1,200 antigen and antibody kits that should have been directed to states and municipalities lacking tests. The mayor of Washington, D.C., Muriel Bowser, says her virus-gripped city can test only 1,500 people per day. But White can use his 1,200 tests, damned the dying. See, he wanted to be the first to carry out President Trump's reckless desire to resume live sports, convinced that his hotel-to-studio quarantine plan provides the very playbook for other leagues when, in truth, it should be a scary cautionary tale for why sports should not resume. Let's see if White gives a shit, his words. Should the virus spread throughout his kingdom, cancel two more fan-free events this week in the same building, and, I don't know, maybe infect him. Here was Dana, the megalomaniac.
You know, the whole world is weird right now. Everything's weird. This whole event's weird. You know, it's different. We live in a different world than we did 2 months ago. And, you know, the bottom line is the system worked. The system is you want to find people that, you know, what you don't want to do is 2 days after the fight say, oh, shit, Jacare tested positive for, you know. So it worked. I mean, the system worked that we put in place. I mean, most of you that are here have worked with us for a long time. You know how we are. Without sounding like a jackass, we're really good at what we do. We're very, very good at what we do. And the way that this week went, we'll just get better. We'll get better by Wednesday. Then we'll be better by Saturday. And then after Saturday, we'll start to catch our stride and really get this thing dialed in and get it figured out. And the longer this goes, the better the testing technology is going to get and the faster it will get. And, we're going to prove by next Saturday that professional sports can come back safely.
Yeah. Was there any discussion at all when it was first identified on Wednesday to just pull the fight then or to send him home then rather than wait? And obviously he did the face-offs and he mingled with some people and that sort of thing. So in retrospect, would it have been better on Wednesday to just say, hey, man, he says he's been around some people with it. We just got to get him out of here.
No, yeah, I mean, we had this guy was with the people that he was with the entire time. You know, we kept him away from people, and now we know that he has it. He tested positive. We tested him. We know he has it, and now we can help him too. Whatever this guy's going to need, we know he's positive, and we can help him and his family. I don't know, you know, what he's going to need medically or what, you know. That's the other thing. When we're testing all of our employees and our fighters, we'll find out who has this thing, and we can help them.
Yeah. Last thing for me on that, you said, you know, you're going to continue to get better, continue to change. Are there any direct changes that will be made to the fighters that are coming in this week, any policy, procedure changes because of what happened here? Was there anything learned that you could say, okay, here's where we tweak it now?
I'm sure, yeah, of course. You know, however it was handled this week, this is our first week. Like I said, we'll be better Wednesday. We'll be better Saturday, and so on and so on. It'll only get better. Yeah. And we can share what we learned here doing three events with other sports leagues who are reaching out to us and asking.
Go ahead. Well, I was about to ask that. How many sports leagues have?
Yeah, no, the sports leagues and, you know, states asking us. You know, a lot can be learned by what we're doing here, not just for professional sports, but, you know, sending people back to work and lots of other things in life.
Has the president reached out to you? Since
talked to the president tonight. He called me, yeah.
Just say congratulations.
Yeah.
You will hear not even the slightest condemnation of White on any news platform attached to ESPN, which greeted app users hours before UFC 249 with an eyeball blitz, a large ad hawking the ESPN Plus exclusive pay-per-view stream. Remember, ESPN is owned by Disney, the purveyor of all of our hopes and dreams, and run by Bob Iger, who said during an earnings call last week, reporting the company's $1.4 billion bloodbath, quote, "People find comfort in our messages of hope and optimism," end quote, Bob Iger. If Iger thinks hope and optimism ooze from sweaty cage fighters who might be spreading a deadly virus, then I invite him to climb into that octagon, or at least listen to Zachary Binney, an Atlanta-based doctor who used his Twitter page to torch White as, quote, negligent, end quote, for mishandling safety protocols and restarting the event too soon. I'm quoting Binney, quote, "If this was your system working as designed, your system is bogus," end quote. But then this is what happens when the UFC president worships Trump. He thinks the White House is named for him. Here was Trump on the UFC 249 broadcast.
I'm standing in a very important spot, right outside the Oval Office, and you're looking at the White House behind me. And it's an honor to be here, and it's an honor to salute you. And I want to congratulate Dana White and the UFC. They're going to have a big match. We love it. We think it's important. Get the sports leagues back. Let's play. You do the social distancing and whatever else you have to do. But we need sports. We want our sports back. And congratulations to Dana White, UFC.
It's enough to make one hurl and puts into perspective a story that normally would elicit contempt. The possibility that Mike Krzyzewski's imperial reign at Duke will be sullied if Zion Williamson was paid in the latest chapter of the sneaker scandals. Does paying a college basketball player, even at pious Duke, compare to jeopardizing lives? If it struck you as odd that no fighters criticized UFC for proceeding with the event after Souza was sent home, well, it seems White threatened their livelihoods. As tweeted out by Showtime Sports president Steven Espinoza, they were required to sign documents agreeing to accept possible losses of purses and bonuses, responded White.
That's not true. First of all, there's something in the contract for disparagement.
Right.
There's a disparagement clause in there that's in all of our contracts. Isn't that creepy looking little fucker a lawyer? Isn't that creepy little fucking goofball a lawyer? Does he not know what disparagement means? If you disparage the company, I'm not even a fucking lawyer, and I know the answer to that question. Yeah, it's disparagement. It'd be like if you came out and said, they never tested me. The UFC never tested me for the coronavirus. But if you came out and had something critical to say about the testing that was true, that wouldn't be disparagement.
Tonight it was announced that Amanda Nunes...
Fucking law school did he go to? I can't stand that fucking creep. Anyway, if you couldn't tell, go ahead.
After which White declared somehow that his life and death farce was an unequivocal success, providing that blueprint, gulp, for other U.S. businesses to resume. Never mind that White, while waiting for the test results on Friday, not only staged a weigh-in with Souza, but was not wearing a mask as he fist-bumped the fighter. And never mind that UFC bagged its original safety-first plan and held post-fight interviews inside the octagon, which placed color commentator Joe Rogan in virus peril when he was to have conducted remote interviews as fighters wore sanitized headsets in isolation. So much for that plan.
A little lackadaisical, a little lethargical, so he's just... I don't know. I'm not happy with it. I'll give myself what you give it, Coach? About a C minus. I won, so C plus.
Always room for improvement. Listen, sir, congratulations. Look forward to seeing you again. Ryan Spann, to no one in the audience.
What frightens me is the too many power players in sports, a $200 billion industry teetering on the brink, share White's hell-bent view about the health catastrophe of our time. Of course, millions worldwide want sports to return. The owners losing billions, the networks dying with Korean baseball, the fans who need entertainment and self-identity joyrides, the gamblers who would rather contract COVID-19 than go another day without real action. But athletes are not automatons or slaves in this fraught, unprecedented equation. They are human beings with loved ones at home who shouldn't be subjected to wealth over health pressures just because live events are, essential to the American psyche, the crumbling sports and broadcast economies, and to Trump's nighttime lazy boy diversions. I put essential in quotes. The smart play here is for big sports to wait until 2021 and then move forward after assessing the fallout and reimagining the industry. Once again, with emphasis, why resume games and events if the people in uniform, athletes, coaches, officials, are not safe? I'm quoting the tennis icon, Rafa Nadal, speaking for many athletes, quote, I think 2020 has been practically lost. I'm hopeful of being able to start next year. Sadly, I'm not going to lie. The feeling is that we are losing a year of our lives. NBA star CJ McCollum told Yahoo Sports, quote, I am worried like the rest of the world. You have to think at some point when there are drastic measures that need to be taken, is it really worth it? It's either safe or not. Yet, the stench of self-interest continues to share the air with zillions of coronavirus particles. Don't confuse the cautious reopening of businesses or even attempts to reestablish the PGA Tour, the ultimate solo sport, golf, with the ill-devised concept of team sports returning while defying physical distancing mandates and mass gatherings bans. Leagues and broadcast networks would love to play ball as soon as the summer while people continue to die in large numbers, maybe right next door. And if you dare to oppose the resumption of games, well, you must be a negative nabob or a germophobic dweeb who hates sports, as I've been called. In the rush to resume Major League Baseball wishful inching toward a July the 4th start, the NFL releasing its schedule and expecting a September start with fans in the stands, and the NBA clinging to a pipe dream within a quarantined Disney World and Las Vegas casino hotel, It's absolutely inhumane to be planning games, even on TV, with empty seats until every commissioner, pushy owner, and sneaky operative with a political or financial agenda can state the following without flunking a lie detector test. Ready? Sports bubbles will not be Petri dishes for contagion. I'll repeat. Sports bubbles will not be Petri dishes for contagion. Flunk the test. They might hope for the best, but hoping is not knowing when it comes to the pandemic. I shouldn't have to issue updates, but I will. The death count hasn't slowed, with the virus killing nearly 300,000 worldwide and 80,000 plus in the U.S. At least 1,000 Americans have died and 25,000 have been infected each day since early April. And the U.S. leads the world with almost 1.4 million cases. But big sports continues to shrug and wear blinders, dedicated to ignoring the blight in the interest of money. It's one thing to resume sports after 9/11 or during wartime when the battles are overseas, but this virus is a ghostly, unsolvable evil that has locked us all in a toxic grip, capable of striking anybody at any time, despite inane views that it afflicts only the elderly and the poor. Sports, with or without spectators, is just asking for a mass breakout. This is no time to come off as greedy and arrogant in a nation overwhelmed by two horrors, COVID-19 and rampant unemployment. The leagues can curry the favor of politicians and doctors who downplay the health risks. Yet, isn't that a blatant disregard for life, especially if they use tests still lacking in some hospitals and laboratories? And if sports leaders do hoard resources like Dana White, do they realize how many tests would have to be administered on a regular basis? How difficult and maddening it would be just to stage one 9-inning ball game or a 60-minute football game? Is anybody out there thinking? Not MLB Commissioner Rob Manfred, who is proposing a season of 80 games or so in geographical pods with expanded playoffs. Never mind that possible second wave of virus, while asking players to take pay cuts and assume health risks all at once. This reeks of a typical attempt by baseball owners to paint players as bad guys in a brewing labor dispute. And right now, nobody is in the mood for mudslinging between billionaires and millionaires. Shame on the owners for not pausing their selfish desires and waiting for credible medical answers, assuming any are coming. Quote, the coronavirus will establish the timetable for sports. We will have coronavirus in the fall. I am convinced of that, said who else? Dr. Anthony Fauci, who is in quarantine himself right now after possible contact with a Trump staffer who tested positive. Actually, Adam Silver is thinking, as NBA legend Shaquille O'Neal calls for the season to be canceled, and Los Angeles Clippers coach Doc Rivers admits he's, quote, worried, unquote, about reopening practice facilities, Silver is confronting the truths that other commissioners prefer to disregard, telling players gloomily on a conference call, and I'm quoting Silver, until there is a vaccine or some magical cocktail that prevents people from dying from this virus, we are going to be dealing with it collectively, end quote. Meaning NBA players will assume health risks to resume play and draw their ample salaries that are sure to shrink. That's because spectators are not expected until next season at the earliest, if then, in a league that generates 40% of revenues via paying customers. According to the Athletic website, Silver told players that the NBA, quote, couldn't start now even if we wanted to, end quote, even as many franchises are crushed financially by the pandemic. And California Governor Gavin Newsom is thinking. His state is home to 15 franchises in the four major sports leagues and numerous big-time college facilities. Yet Newsom is the anti-white, refusing to consider sports without live audiences, let alone with fans in the stands. Asked about the NFL's schedule release, Newsom could have played a smooth political hand, knowing that a $6 billion stadium for the LA Rams and Chargers is nearing completion. Instead, the governor posed hard questions for Commissioner Roger Goodell and the owners. As for fans and stadiums and arenas inside those buildings, Newsom said it's impractical until 2021 in a state that has topped 2,700 deaths.
Yeah, on the sports question, it's difficult to imagine a stadium that's filled until we have immunity, until we have a vaccine. It's difficult for me to imagine what the league, broadly leagues, do when one or two of their key personnel or players are tested positive. Do they quarantine the rest of the team? If an offensive lineman is practicing with a defensive lineman and they have tested positive, what happens to the rest of the line? What happens for the game coming up next weekend? It's inconceivable to me that that's not a likely scenario. So it's a very challenging question you're asking, and it's a very challenging question. I know it's being asked by Major League Baseball, certainly by the commissioner, the NFL. I've had the privilege of talking to many of them, including the players' unions and associations, and I can assure you this, it's very fluid, and I think it should be. They should be very, very sensitive to the needs of the communities of which they are identified and where they practice and play. But we are working collaborative and cooperatively across the spectrum, and that includes soccer, includes UFC, includes many different leagues and affiliations, all that really want to get back. And I think many of us, I've talked a lot about my own background in baseball and why substantially I'm here because of what sports did for me. So when I say this, that I'm passionate about sports, I really am, and how uniting sports can be at a time when people feel so torn apart and so anxious. And I really think they're incredibly important in terms of the spirit and pride that a community, state, and a nation can build. And so I say this very, very honestly. I hope I'll be able to answer that question sooner than later. But it's a very tough question for these leagues to answer because they must have a safety first, health first mindset. And there are conditions that persist in this state and this nation that make reopening very, very challenging.
It's also good to see Mark Cuban, who still hasn't ruled out a presidential run, by the way, finally emphasizing health first after once leading the charge for sports to resume. Here was Cuban on ESPN Radio.
I have no idea, honestly. You know, I guess getting feedback in terms of what players would be confident in, you know, because that's what this is all about. Who do we trust with our lives? Seriously. Yeah. You know, if you're a player, who do you trust with your life? If you're a coach or a trainer or anybody for that matter that's, you know, essential personnel and getting something back together, do you trust the hotel that we're going to stay at to keep everything safe and the technology that they're using, the protocols they're using? Who do you trust with your life? And that's a big question to ask somebody.
How long will it take for sound judgment to cut through the self-centered delusion? Stop for a moment to consider the real. We're actually going to abandon distancing and masks so football players can tackle each other, basketball players can drip sweat beads on each other, and baseball players can breathe on each other? We're really going to proceed with seasons when one positive test among hundreds of essential personnel who would be tested daily might shut down the league. The NBA is weighing whether to allow children, wives, girlfriends inside its quarantine bubble, which could prompt Vegas to set at least one over-under in its empty casinos. How many people catch the virus on the first day of testing? God forbid if a league copies the UFC strategy of not creating a lockdown perimeter around the hotel and arena, White asking 300 workers to be responsible when entering the outside world during an 8-day period of events this week when he's not responsible? MLB wants teams to play in home ballparks within areas less infected by the virus, but wouldn't players risk bringing strains back to their families every night? And does Manfred, an attorney by trade, realize legions of lawyers are ready to pounce if the virus spreads? MLB does have political support from Trump and some governors, but what about other officials in states, cities, counties, and one Canadian province, Ontario? How can baseball start in July when five ballparks here in California are shut down. They're going to make the Dodgers, Angels, Giants, A's, and Padres play only road games for months? Has Manfred called the wives and children of affected players, telling them dad won't be around for a while and, hey, he might bring home the virus, too? Mike Trout and Clayton Kershaw, two of baseball's biggest names, already have said no. How can MLB stage a legitimate season without superstars who don't want to take risks? And I don't need to tell athletes that this second wave of the pandemic could be right in that on-deck circle preparing another wicked blast. All of these proposals, these hopeful stories disseminated by ESPN and other sports media ventures whose survival depends on the resumption of sports, has anybody asked the athletes what they think? Sports cannot happen unless the athletes say yes. Don't presume they will. I'm quoting Boston Red Sox pitcher Colin McHugh. He told Mass Live, quote, "We're in a situation where you can't make this mandatory. You can't tell a guy you have to come play or else your roster spot is not going to be here when you come back. You can't tell a guy to risk his life and the life of his family and the lives of anybody he chooses to be around to come play this game. I'm a husband. I'm a father. There are many guys in the league with underlying conditions, with pre-existing conditions like diabetes and heart arrhythmias. You look at our coaching staffs, there's tons of guys over 65, umpires, a lot of guys over 65. When you're talking about risk factors, there are going to be guys who sincerely have to weigh the risks of coming back versus staying at home," end quote, Colin McHugh. Then St. Louis Cardinals pitcher Andrew Miller told ESPN, quote, "I don't think anything can be done until safety can be guaranteed and we feel comfortable. It's not hard to get 1 degree of separation away from players who have kids who may have conditions or other family members that live with them," end quote. Don't tell that, though, to some sports executives who are pressuring athletes to return or else. ESPN quoted two NBA general managers, unnamed cowards, who expect athletes to just cave in and play when faced with no paychecks. This is not the time, obviously, for meat on the hoof demands. Yet the NFL marches on, convinced a gladiator sport will proceed with fans. They expect players to be ready for tackling warfare in early September. Hopefully, this is more a grandstand play ahead of lucrative broadcasting negotiations, they are coming up, than an actual firm plan. Because how did the virus spread, say, in Italy? Oh, when tens of thousands of fans packed together in a soccer stadium simultaneously released untold amounts of saliva when goals were scored. Let the Miami Dolphins present a vision for physical distancing and 20-point cleansing while reducing Hard Rock Stadium to a 15,000-seat venue. It is still a Petri dish. And if local governments, such as here in California, don't allow fans inside stadiums, the NFL says it will play in states and cities that do. It's the same strategy proposed by MLB. Is this not absolute lunacy? In a matter of, what, weeks, we're casually going to assume regular seasons will happen with no concern for consequences if, say, a star player fails a temperature check and must be removed for immediate testing for maybe 2 weeks? How would that impact the season? Oh, that's just like a ankle sprain. Yeah. Imagine the panic, the preposterousness of it all, just so rich leagues and networks can salvage a little bit of their billions. That is to assume, and this is really a big assumption, that Americans even want sports without bodies in the seats. What begins as a unique experience inevitably will devolve into a creepy reminder of our lost normalcy. Imagine an NBA playoff game with no fans, Tom Brady versus Drew Brees with no fans, SoFi, whatever the hell they call it, stadium here. What is it? That new stadium in L.A. debuting with no fans for Rams Cowboys. People who say they're ready for that aren't giving themselves enough credit for their roles in the total experience. Fox Sports has talked of creating virtual fans and piping in a crowd noise track that ebbs and flows depending on game developments. Look, the essence of sports is palpable human energy, and it's gone until people come back to stadiums and arenas, and most are not coming back, as several surveys have indicated, without a vaccine. Sports continues to stay somewhat relevant in the news cycle. LeBron James is among those outraged by the fatal Georgia shooting of Ahmaud Arbery, an unarmed black man gunned down while jogging by two white men. Charles Barkley still bemoans his frayed friendship with Michael Jordan, whose 10-part docuseries hit a creative peak Sunday night with a chronicling of his father's murder and his subsequent decision to play minor league baseball, though still failing in a production controlled by Jordan to investigate his unavoidable gambling habits during a still murky 1993. More on The Last Dance in a bit. The college basketball cesspool gurgles with the NCAA referring to Kansas and Coach Bill Self as, quote, egregious, end quote, rules breakers, while Giannis Antetokounmpo says his social media accounts were hacked and that he doesn't long to sign with the Golden State Warriors. Not yet, anyway. Oh, and the Baltimore Ravens want to dump safety Earl Thomas after his wife, allegedly pointing a gun at his head, found him in bed with other women and his brother Seth. Still, I can't help but fixate on the fool in Jacksonville and his two encore events coming up this week. UFC now stands for unabashedly flouting coronavirus. The athletes are not safe, so please, shut down sports before somebody dies. I'm happy young people are witnessing the maniacal Michael Jordan, the SOB, and his merciless obsession to conquer flesh and blood. And I'm curious how this plays 20 years into the 21st century during a pandemic when tormenting and punching out teammates in the name of domination and trying to gouge the eyes of opponents, too, doesn't exactly go with the flow of the times. You know what I mean? Does dictatorial leadership work now? It certainly did in the 90s when coaches such as Bob Knight were still in vogue, and every target of Jordan's wrath agrees that his methods were worth the madness, as the Bulls won 6 titles and he won 6 MVP awards in their 6 NBA Finals tries. Again, 666, sign of the devil, and some people, after watching Jordan over the weekend, must think he's the devil. A particular point of reference is Steve Kerr, who exchanged punches with Michael in a practice fight that pretended how Jordan trusted Kerr with the final jump shot to win a championship. A skinny, rich white kid from Pacific Palisades actually slugged his airness, but gained his respect. That's how it worked. One had to stand up to the bully, just like in the junior high school playground situation. Or, as Will Perdue called him, an asshole and a jerk. Yeah, Will Perdue calling Michael an asshole and a jerk, yet also said he was a hell of a teammate after realizing what Jordan was trying to accomplish, make everybody tough and battle-hardened for the postseason. Here were Jordan and Kerr about their fisticuffs.
So one day at practice, Phil put Steve Kerr guarding me.
We were on opposite sides in a scrimmage, and he's talking all kinds of trash, and I'm pissed because, you know, we're getting our ass kicked.
Phil sensed my aggression, but he was trying to tone me down, and he starts calling these tick-attack fellas. Now, I'm getting mad because for you to be protecting this guy, that's not going to help us when we play New York. It's not going to help us when we play these teams that are very physical. Next time he did it, I just haul off the and I said... And I fouled Steve Kerr. I said, "Now that's foul."
I have a lot of patience as a human being, but I tend to snap at some point because I'm extremely competitive too. Just not really good enough to back it up usually. But I'm going. I'm gonna fight.
He hauls off and hits me in the chest, and I just haul off and hit him right in the f***ing eye. And Phil just throws me out of practice.
And how poignant to see Jordan break down at the end of episode 7. Yes, another crying scene. As he tells director Jason Eyre to stop the interview as he explained his tyrannical, expletive-filled tirades.
people see this and they're going to say, well, he wasn't really a nice guy. He may have been a tyrant. Oh, well, that's you, because you never wanted anything. I wanted to win, but I wanted them to win and be a part of that as well. Look, I don't have to do this. I'm only doing it because it is who I am. That's how I played the game. That was my mentality. If you don't want to play that way, don't play that way. Break.
Let's be clear here. The footage in cobwebs for 22 years before Jordan finally agreed to release and produce his own docuseries is what makes The Last Dance so compelling. It explains Jordan, the complicated Jordan, the maniacal Jordan, and it succeeds in capturing the extravaganza that dominated sports, pop culture, marketing, and Americana in the 90s. But again, I remind you, this is a Michael Jordan production. He has his hands all over the storylines, all over the content. The series did delve into his father's murder, but rather than do investigative work into whether the crimes had anything to do with Michael's well-documented and quite disturbing gambling habits at the time, which is a fair question given the extent of his addiction, and that's what I said, addiction, error again, relies on dated footage from former NBA Commissioner David Stern, who passed away last year, to poo-poo any connection between the murder and gambling. A real journalist pursues more than one source, but then this is not real journalism, not when Jordan is the executive producer. In that sense, he is lording over The Last Dance the way he lorded over his teammates and the entire NBA. Hell, the entire world. With two more episodes left, this will be remembered as a welcome eye-opener and massive ratings success during a pandemic. But an Oscar winner, this is not. The Last Dance is telling the Michael Jordan story the way Michael Jordan wants it told. Short shrifting his gambling habits, his associations with cocaine dealers and creeps as he gambled, and his refusal to tackle social issues. As a player, Jordan never would have responded as LeBron James did to the fatal shooting of Ahmaud Arbery last week. But as James spoke out on social media, Jordan's words hung limp in the 2020 air. Quote, I wasn't an activist. I was a basketball player, end quote. Yep, he was the greatest basketball player of all time, without dispute. But was he Muhammad Ali, Jim Brown, even Colin Kaepernick? Not even close. Airball.
And now a final Mariotti commentary too hot for ESPN, too smart for the internet, and too chill for political activism. Take it away, Jay.
On one of the many radio appearances I've made to discuss The Last Dance, a host asked me how I would counsel young people who want to be in sports media. I paused for quite a while, then suggested they pursue this profession only as a moonlight diversion to, I don't know, tech or something where a good, comfortable life can be maintained, sustained. I have been lucky to make my fortune and achieve mass exposure during the industry heyday, peaking with a daily reading, viewing, and listening audience of well over 1 million after 25 years as a columnist and commentator. But I could afford to be fiercely independent when I worked for outlets that shared my desire to cover sports as the multi-billion dollar industry it was. Now, a media career is a matter of survival, even in normal times. In a pandemic, it's perhaps headed toward extinction without advertising to support outlets that will continue to die without a vaccine or cure. My concern is that smart young people will have to become fanboys, forced to climb into bed with the people they cover. Hell, as seen in The Last Dance, the likes of Sam Smith, the newspaper writer, tried to make money by climbing into bed with the people they covered. When you see Scott Van Pelt do his Mr. Rogers act on ESPN, or writers rhapsodizing about storytelling and not hard-hitting journalism and commentary, they have basically sold out. So if it's not in your soul to sell out, I suggest you stop writing prose and start writing code. That's our show. For our producer and editor, Chris, I am Jay. reminding you to never, ever let anybody mute you in life.